Very good Friday. Welcome to today's edition of the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm your host, Lori Boyer. In addition to feature agricultural news reports, I'll bring you a look at national and regional agricultural news headlines, and I'll start with regional ag news right after this.
Get ready for the 2023 Crop Consultant Conference in Visalia, California on September 27th and 28th, hosted by Progressive Crop Consultant Magazine and Western Region Certified Crop Advisors. This two-day event will feature a combined 44 hours of live and online continuing education units for attendees in the heart of California, a trade show, first-class dining, entertainment, and a mixer. Come join CCAs, PCAs, growers, and industry professionals at the Visalia Convention Center to hear from researchers and colleagues on the latest in agriculture. Registration is now open at progressivecrop.com/conference.
We're waking up to a new dawn in agriculture, a better way, where farmers stop working the soil and start working with it. At Huma, our carbon-rich, humate-based products improve soil health and fertility, deliver nutrients more efficiently, and reduce crop input costs. Welcome to Humix Solutions with a human touch. Visit huma.us to learn more.
The Bureau of Land Management has awarded agreements with Cal Fire, Caltrans, and the California Conservation Corps to increase CCC clearing, brush restoration work, fields reduction, and forest health projects on BLM-managed public lands in California. The three cooperative agreements are being funded by President Joe Biden's bipartisan infrastructure law. Within the next 5 years, the Department of the Interior will receive $1.5 billion in bill funding to invest in wildfire preparedness, fuels management, post-fire restoration, and fire science, with BLM California receiving more than $15 million to date. From that amount, the BLM will provide $800,000 of bill funding to their partner agencies to complete the restoration work near important infrastructure such as roads, recreation areas, and private homes. These agreements were made through the Good Neighbor Authority, which enables the BLM to collaborate with state agencies to complete projects on BLM-managed lands statewide. Agriculture interests from around the world gathered in Rome recently for a United Nations Food Systems Summit. The topics included reducing food waste, which can be a key element in reducing greenhouse gas emissions. The USDA and the Food and Drug Administration are working together to try to reduce U.S. food waste by 50% by the year 2030. According to the California Department of Food and Agriculture, Californians generate approximately 6 million tons of food waste annually, and among the ways CDFA is supporting the reduction effort is a page on their website dedicated to providing information about the issue and potential solutions. USDA meteorologist Brad Rippey has the latest on how the cotton crop is progressing.
We have almost half of the crop, 47%, setting bolls by July 30th. That is slightly behind the five-year average of 50%, even further behind last year's 57%. And we do see delays to some degree in Texas, but even more so as you move into parts of the Southeast and in California as well. States that are more than 10 percentage points behind the five-year average for cotton setting bolls include Arkansas, California, and then along with North Carolina.
As for the condition of the cotton crop?
The big story of the week for cotton, big decline in Texas cotton condition week over week. So that has taken the national number of good to excellent rating for cotton and dropped it to 41%, down 5 points from last week's 46%. And then a corresponding jump in the very poor to poor ratings, 31% this week, up 7 points from last week's 24%. Of course, driving the national number is Texas. A week ago, cotton in Texas, 40%, very poor to poor. The number this week is 50%.
USDA meteorologist Brad Rippey. United States Representative Jimmy Panetta of California is leading a bipartisan coalition in introducing the Growing Access to Environmental Sustainability Act to reduce barriers that producers face in accessing agricultural conservation programs. Co-leading this legislation from California include Representatives John Duarte as well as Jim Costa. Disproportionately limit those producers with high input costs from participating in certain USDA conservation-focused programs. Those limitations have not kept pace pace with inflation, and these barriers reduce the overall impact of federal efforts to conserve environment and empower farmers to mitigate the impact of climate change. Agricultural producers are on the front lines of conservation efforts, yet are often unable to access federal programs designed to assist their work as good stewards of the environment, according to Representative Panetta. He says he is proud to author and introduce this bipartisan legislation that would waive certain limitations to expand the reach and effectiveness of these agriculture conservation programs. By empowering farmers with conservation support they need, he says they can better safeguard the bounty that they help provide the country. Specifically, the Gates Act would eliminate the limitation for farms that get 75% of their income from farming or related farming practices, such as agritourism, direct-to-consumer marketing of agricultural products, sale of agricultural equipment owned by person or entity, and other agriculture-related activities as determined by the Secretary of Agriculture. And this would apply to the following conservation programs: the Conservation Reserve Program, the Environmental Quality Incentives Program, and the Conservation Stewardship Program. The Gates Act is being endorsed by the Specialty Crop Farm Bill Alliance, Western Growers, and the California Farm Bureau. In backyards, vacant lots, parks, and on rooftops, Oakland, California farmers are working to increase access to healthy food in the city's most insecure neighborhoods. City-specific data on food security is limited because Oakland doesn't have its own public health department, but what they do know is affording a healthy and well-balanced diet can be challenging for many working-class people in the city. Research from the Alameda County Food Bank shows it takes a family of four $92,267 annually to meet their basic household needs, while 65% of their clients have incomes of less than $28,290. According to the nonprofit Healthy Alameda County, neighborhoods in West and East Oakland are the highest in need, and Elizabeth Esperanza, co-director of the nonprofit organization Hope Collaborative, says that her organization estimates the food insecurity rates in 2019 will be somewhere between 35-60% in West Oakland and 20-40% in East Oakland. By comparison, they found the rates will be 12-20% in the Oakland Hills. That according to an article in Oaklandside. Esperanza, who leads the Hope Collaborative's food justice work, believes that urban farming can help address the problem. It is why the group is currently working to help Oakland residents establish home gardens. The farms that are doing this are more than just feeding Oakland's residents. Members are invoking Oakland's history of radical food justice work spearheaded by the Black Panther Party in the late 60s, rethinking conventional food systems and returning land to marginalized communities, according to the article. A new set of rules to protect water quality in the North Coast region has drawn the ire of Mendocino growers. The North Coast Regional Water Quality Control Board has proposed new rules which would regulate discharges from vineyards to protect streams and rivers. The proposal could particularly affect growers in the Navarro River watershed in Anderson Valley and the Russian River watershed in the Ukiah Valley, where 95% of the 65,000 acres of land planted in vineyards in the North Coast are located. A public workshop on a draft of the proposed restrictions on discharge permits for vineyards is set for 9 a.m. on August 4th. It will be held in person in Santa Rosa and also by Zoom. Comments on the draft environment impact report, an in-depth evaluation of the proposal, are due by August 30th. The new rules would regulate cumulative impacts of pollutants, require growers to self-assess pollution in their vineyards, and monitor surface and groundwater. Growers would have the option to enroll in third-party monitoring programs. The growers have estimated the proposed mandate could cost $15 per acre annually. A group of Mendocino growers spoke against the proposed new rules in June before the North Coast Regional Water Quality Control Board, saying that the proposed new rules, if implemented, would be ineffective and expensive, in part because of the requirement that growers monitor streams and rivers for pollution. Among other points, a grower said sediments found in creeks and water streams do not come from their vineyards. Instead, the pollution comes from other sources, such as roads and off-road vehicles above their properties in the region. Mendocino Farm Bureau plans to fight the plan as the organization has consulted with legal staff. The August 4th public workshop will be held at the David C. Joseph Room, once again in Santa Rosa. The meeting can be viewed online at cal-span.org.
Grapevine red blotch disease, which had its first discovery in 2008, is caused by grapevine red blotch virus and hinders the photosynthetic capabilities of leaves on producing vines, therefore reducing fruit sugar load. It is mostly spread by the three-cornered alfalfa hopper, but it has been assumed that other vectors exist. on top of the quality impacts and its ability to spread quickly in red grape cultivars. Diagnosis is often challenging because of the nature of symptoms in grapevines and complexity of testing methods. Because of this complexity, Oregon State University faculty research assistant Joseph DeShields and other researchers looked into and recently released findings comparing the accuracy of four viral detection methods, showing that results of a test may actually depend on the timing of a test as well as the type. This information is vital to better understanding detection of the virus and will be of great help to the viticulture industry moving forward. DeShields explained in general why it has historically been challenging for growers to test for and diagnose red blotch.
There are so many things that can cause sort of red blotching, or, you know, the first thing is with diagnosing at the symptom level is you need a really well-trained crew, and not everyone has a really well-trained crew. Even the well-trained professionals that can identify these symptoms have a difficult time. There's, you know, grapevine leaf roll virus, which has very similar symptoms in some regards. There's foliar, nutrient deficiencies that create foliar symptoms similar to red blotch. Even mechanical damage of shoots can cause this like red flagging effect on the leaves that sometimes people confuse as red blotch. So there's a lot that can be mistaken there. And I think it brings out the importance of early detection by means that are not symptom-based. So such as PCR, LAMP, which is sort of a new and interesting method of detection. There's a lot of labs that will accept your samples, but I think there's growing interest in doing this sort of molecular DNA-based detection in-house. Because this is a DNA virus, it gives people more opportunities and more accessibility to tools that are designed for growers and laymen.
Accurate testing of the virus has also posed difficulties, as it was previously unclear which tests were more accurate at certain phenological stages of vine growth. This matters because the red blotch virus moves up through the vine as it matures over time and is more obvious in its symptomology later in the season. Thus, DeShields said early detection is critical, and PCR-based assays were found to be the most accurate detection method at early stages, while the cheaper LAMP method works best at later stages.
Earlier is important because we're not really seeing the symptoms until much later into the year. So like as of now in Southern Oregon, our Pinot Noir vines are just approaching veraison. We're not really seeing much symptoms currently. So timing of detection is kind of similar in regards to symptoms. If you're not seeing symptoms, there's a chance of detection, but really only in those lower leaves. So we, in this most recent paper we published earlier this year, found that at fruit set, between fruit set and veraison, you really got to be testing these old basal leaves near the bottom of the canopy. We didn't see actually any detection of red blotch virus at the apical or top leaves of the canopy at this time of the year. It wasn't really until about commercial harvest time, for Southern Oregon's about late September, maybe early October, where we got detection in the upper canopy. So it's important to know that if you're sampling for red blotch or even looking for symptoms, basal leaves, older leaves, always ideal because of that movement of the virus throughout the canopies is kind of slow.
The results of the research will prove beneficial to the viticulture industry and offer a range of options and costs for more accurate testing of red blotch at different phenological stages.
What we found is the LAMP method can work pretty well, but not until really later in the season. I think we saw it veraison. It was about 75% the accuracy of PCR at veraison. So in any earlier, it really gave so many false negatives that it's not worth deploying early in the season. So I'd say around veraison, if growers are looking to save money and time, LAMP is a good method to consider, especially if they're trying to get outside the routine testing of external labs and the cost of external labs. LAMP can be something they could deploy if they're interested in testing, say, Verasion or later. And certainly if they're doing this testing at, you know, near harvest or even later, you can test woody tissue after harvest. LAMP is certainly comparable to PCR and qPCR. So it's a tool that's much easier to deploy on a farm. We've trained several growers in the area how to do it, and it's received pretty well.
You're listening to My Ag Life. I'm Taylor Chalstrom.
AgroPlante is the leading manufacturer in specialty products. AgroPlante formulates products that rise to the challenge of today's growing conditions. Saline and sodic soils reduce crop yield and cause significant crop losses. AgroPlante developed Cation EX5 Plus with growers in mind to manage soil salinity. With multiple years of research, Cation EX5 Plus has proven to be an excellent source of calcium and an effective soil salinity manager. Run it through drip irrigation without any issues. Simplify your application method with innovative and efficient formulations. Alleviate salinity stress with Cation EX5 Plus. AgroPlante, imagination, innovation, science in action.
Imports are vital and increasingly important in ensuring fresh fruit and vegetables are available year-round in the United States. Since the 2008 completion of the North American Free Trade Agreement, U.S. fresh fruit and vegetable imports have increased with few interruptions, according to USDA's Economic Research Service. Between 2007 and 2021, the percentage of U.S. fresh fruit and vegetable availability supplied by imports grew from 50 to 60% for fresh fruit and from 20 to 38% for fresh vegetables. The import share increased by more than 20 percentage points during this period for 10 crops. Those crops include asparagus, avocados, bell peppers, blueberries, broccoli, cauliflower, cucumbers, raspberries, snap peas, and tomatoes. The United States-Mexico-Canada Agreement, implemented on July 1st of 2021, continues NAFTA's market access provisions for fruit and vegetables. In 2022, Mexico and Canada supplied 51% and 2% respectively of U.S. fresh fruit imports and 69% and 20% respectively of U.S. fresh vegetable imports in terms of value. Senators recently introduced the Farmer-to-Farmer Education Act. Senators Ben Ray Lujan, a New Mexico Democrat, and Jerry Moran, a Kansas Republican, introduced the bill last week. The legislation would leverage existing technical assistance resources by supporting farmer-led education networks and build capacity for new ones, particularly for communities historically marginalized from existing systems, as a key strategy to increase adoption of conservation practices. As farmers and ranchers are met daily with unique challenges, including unexpected weather, droughts, and floods, they often turn to colleagues to find the right answer. The lawmakers say the bill fits a critical gap in federal programs to support and provide guidance to those networks. Specifically, the bill would authorize the National Resources Conservation Service to enter into cooperative agreements with community-based organizations in each state that can build on established and beginning peer-to-peer networks and/or create new ones. The 2023 Precision Agriculture Dealership Survey shows continued growth in technology to streamline and increase the efficiency of operations, such as in sprayer boom section nozzle control, turn compensation, fleet management, and telemetry. These are all possible reactions to input costs and skilled worker shortages, according to Purdue University and CropLife America, organizers of the survey. The enthusiasm continues for applying crop inputs with drones. More dealers will offer drone imagery, but fewer dealers are offering satellite or aerial imagery, and dealers say imagery use is declining on farms. On-farm data continues to be used the most for fertilizer-related decisions and for hybrid variety selection, but in the last 2 years, dealers have not increased their use of on-farm data for decision-making. The survey shows 89% of dealers use auto guidance on their application equipment, GPS-guided boom section, nozzle controllers on sprayers, which reduce doubling up and skips, and are used at 82% of dealerships, and sprayer turn compensation continues to grow, now at 41%. Congress faces a daunting September 30th deadline after its August recess to complete work on all 12 appropriations bills, including USDA, to keep the government fully running. September will be a battle royal between a GOP-controlled House bent on attacking spending and culture issues and the Democratic-run Senate fighting those attacks in ag and other areas. House Ag Appropriations Chair and Freedom Caucus member Andy Harris claims the GOP is doing more with less.
This legislation supports critical ag research and plant and animal health programs. It invests in rural communities. It expands access to broadband. And it provides nutrition assistance to those in need.
Ag Appropriations Ranking Democrat Sanford Bishop told the Rules Committee, where the USDA bill is stuck, that it's a bad bill.
It drastically slashes funding for the programs that rural Americans count on significantly, and it slashes the vital safety nets for our most vulnerable populations.
In a Senate, Majority Leader Chuck Schumer is ready for a September fight, likely to run out the clock and devour floor time for other bills like a farm bill, even if it could be readied.
You look at the appropriations bill, you compare the House to the Senate. The contrast, as I said, is glaring, and House Republicans should look to the Senate for how to really get things done and help the American people, instead of just shouting partisan screeds.
But House Republicans insist their cause is right, and that means including the agriculture industry.
This bill also reins in regulatory overreach, protects agricultural land from our foreign adversaries, and restricts the Secretary of Agriculture's discretionary spending authority under the Commodity Credit Corporation, which has been grossly abused to spend more than $10 billion on unauthorized, non-emergency programs.
Failure to pass all 12 spending bills by the end of the fiscal year, September 30th, will trigger an automatic 1% across-the-board spending cut and the need for temporary spending to avert a shutdown. The average retail price of all eight major fertilizers have declined for the third week in a row, with half of the fertilizers posting significant moves lower. Anhydrous retains its leadership in a decline of retail prices. Its average price is 8% less than last month at $691 a ton. The average price of urea and UAN-32 fell by 6% from last month to $581 a ton and $442 a ton, respectively. MAP prices dropped by 5% to $1,041 a ton. The average price of the remaining four fertilizers also declined last month. DAP cost $795 a ton, potash at $594 a ton, 10340 at $715 a ton, and UAN-28 at $383 a ton.
JCS Marketing is your number one way to connect with the ag industry. Through print magazines, digital media, podcast, and live and virtual events, JCS Marketing has the reach to inform, educate, and influence growers in the Western United States.
Everywhere you go, you see West Coast Nut Magazine on every one of my customers' tables. So that tells you everything. It's there, so they're reading it.
Our My Ag Life platform includes podcast interviews and digital articles for busy professionals on the go. Our live events, continuing education webinars, and virtual conferences help growers connect with leading researchers and industry leaders. Let JCS Marketing help you connect.
That will wrap up today's show. You've been listening to the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm Lori Boyer. From all of us here at the JCS Marketing team, thank you for listening.